the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of two. I would love to devote more time to creative writing, journaling, and blogging.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, a writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom who is just beginning to learn the ropes of balancing a baby and everything else.
And you are listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. In this episode, we are talking about creative spaces. So these are the places where the creative magic happens and where we actually sit down to get the work done. And for some of us, those spaces look a lot different than for others, depending on what our projects are and what our homes look like and who we share our homes with. So we are talking today about our creative spaces and what those look like for us. So Abby, where do you get most of your creative work done nowadays?
Yeah, well, I am lucky enough to have my own home office, and I think you do as well, Ashley.
Yes.
So when we were planning out our house, we had three rooms in mind. We were going to have like our bedroom, our guest room, and then my office, because I'd always planned to at some point transition to working from home. So then when we found out we were expecting while we were building our house, it became a, you know, master bedroom office, and the guest room turned into the baby nursery. I hung on to the office for myself because I'm selfish, but
yes,
no.
Good choice.
So that is where we sit now. I do have an office. You know, that may change if we have a second kid, when we have a second kid, maybe. Otherwise, maybe that'll encourage us to finish off part of the basement and put one kid down there or something. I don't know. We'll see. So I don't have to share my office with anybody, really. Every now and again, like Scott or Arthur will come hang out. We have like a little play mat in here. But that is about it.
Yeah, so I'm in a similar situation. I also have my own home office. My office is actually, we found blueprints from our house from when it was first built, and my office never used to exist. It's above our garage, and it was an addition, and we found out from some neighbors that an artist who used to live here added it on to be her studio, which makes me feel really happy that now it's mine, because I feel like it was born to be a creative space. I kind of love it. It has lots of windows and natural light, and it's a really big room with a fireplace, so I'm pretty spoiled. I've got a desk and comfy chairs and bookshelves and a fireplace, and like it's pretty ideal, except it is right off of our kitchen and there is no door. So there are, like, it's my space, but it's also very difficult to keep other people from disturbing me here, especially with the kids being as young as they are. They don't understand the concept of, hey, mom's working. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can put a baby gate up, but they'll still stand there and scream at me.
Or throw things at you over it.
Right. Or I can turn my head like I am right now and I can see like everything that's in the kitchen. So if the kitchen is clean, that's really cool. But if the kitchen is not clean, it can be very distracting. So it's, I really like this space, but it has its downsides as well. I'll say that.
I was going to say, you're married to a carpenter. Shouldn't he be able to just fashion you a door for that, you know, little room?
He definitely could. And maybe I'll do this. No one else is going to be able to see this, but maybe I'll turn my computer and show you, Abby, so you can see what my door looks like. It's very small. It's very narrow. So it's like, it's almost like you're walking into a hallway, except it's not, but that's about the width of it. It's very narrow. And it's, like when you're walking through between my office and the kitchen, there's two doors on either side that are the pantry, and we have to be able to open and close those pantry doors. Cause that's some of the only food storage we have in our kitchen. It's a very interesting setup because this was an added on room and not originally part of the house. So it's a work in progress. I could maybe work out some sort of a pocket door situation or something. We'd have to talk about that. But for right now, it is very open to the rest of the house for good and for bad.
I understand that. I do know for a fact that Menards makes doors custom order to size. So they're just putting that in your pocket if, you know, Jacob doesn't get on it as fast as what you want him to.
He would never let me buy something from Menards, but that's okay.
The other option is Home Depot, so it's kind of a 50-50. Personally envisioning some custom, like, double swing saloon doors between your office and the pantry. Ooh. Just keep that in mind.
Yes, that is a great idea.
No, I totally understand what you say, too, about having a clean kitchen making you more able to focus on creative work. So I think we're going to talk about that later, about whether or not we're messy or clean creative. So have you ever, aside from the fact that you now have to share kind of with your family as people come in and out, have you ever not had a dedicated space for creative work, like some not having a desk or not having like a place where you did your creative stuff?
You know, with my office right now being open to the other people who live in my house, this is probably one of the most disturbed times I've ever had as a creative. I am an only child. So when I was growing up, I always had not only my own room, but there was also a spare bedroom that had like my little desk in it and my computer on it once I was older. And I had a lot of time and space to myself. I had like the whole basement was pretty much mine if I wanted it. I had the two rooms upstairs. I had more space than a child could possibly need, and no one was ever bothering me. And then in college, I shared dorm rooms and apartments with roommates. I was usually living with three other girls while I was in college. And that was, it was tricky in a different way, but it was also kind of, you were more disciplined in college because it was like, well, you have to get this done. Mm-hmm. And other people also had work that they had to get done. Even if it wasn't creative work, they still had their homework. So there was usually a time or a space where you could find what you needed to carve out that time to really like get down to work and not have to worry about being distracted by other people. If nothing else, there was always the library, those little carousels you could sit in and kind of be by yourself. So this is probably the most distracted space I've ever had, even though it is technically mine.
I understand that. I had the exact opposite growing up experience. I was one of six kids, and there was literally no quiet corner of our house. So yeah, I'm a little jealous that you got to, you know, have all that space to read quietly in your window seat or whatever you wanted to do. I just never had that with tons of younger siblings. But otherwise, I never lived in a dorm or shared an apartment in college or anything. I got married about a year out of high school and moved in with Scott, and we've been roomies ever since. But I've always kind of had at least like the second bedroom, which may double as a guest bedroom and an office. Or I know when we were in an apartment, like our second bedroom had like the cat litter boxes and was also my office, which is less ideal than you would want it to be, but it was still kind of my own space. So yeah, for the last, you know, decade or so, I've not had to share space, and that is really, really nice.
Yeah. That's awesome. You're moving in the right direction anyway.
Yeah.
Hopefully it keeps up even as your family grows. You're still able to have that room of your own.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. At some point, though, you know, kids are tall enough to open the door handle. So.
Yes, this is true. You might have to invest in a door that locks.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, otherwise my office kind of doubles as our guest room when people are here with our super fancy blow up air mattress. Maybe at some point we'll be real grown ups and have a guest bed, but that day is not today.
Who needs that?
Yeah. And I know you mentioned before too that you actually can, I guess, get more space or more time for creativity when you're not on the computer. The kids magically leave you alone more.
Yeah. They do. It's really kind of an anomaly. I don't know if it's just like the glowing screen and the keyboard with the buttons that attracts them, or if they feel like I'm more distracted when I'm on the computer. But if I am at my desk, which I often have to be if I'm doing real work, like freelance work that I'm getting paid for, I pretty much have to be at my desk for that stuff oftentimes. But if I can do my creative work, like jot down ideas or write the first draft of an essay or something in a notebook and like maybe sit on the floor by them or on the couch by them, they will play blocks or color or do their own thing. And they still want attention from me, but they're not all like, "Mommy, what you doing? Mommy, are you almost done? Like, why aren't you paying attention to us?" I can actually get some more focused time if I am okay with sort of leaving my office space, or at least leaving my desk and using just a notebook. If I can do that, that often works better for us for some reason. I don't know if that's just my kids or if that's children everywhere, but if you have little kids and you're struggling with that, it might be something to try.
That is interesting. Like you said, I don't know if it's a screen or maybe like you with a pencil and paper is boring because they have access to pencil and paper when they have their color time too. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that is very true. They just see it as like, oh, mommy's playing and we're playing and okay, nothing to see here.
That is really cool. So since you found that out, you can kind of carve out a little bit more space for yourself when you absolutely need to. Mm-hmm. Any other tips that you found for creating space when you literally don't have space or time to kind of get away from people and do your own creative thing?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of these are probably things that people have heard before, especially if, like, I know we are very lucky to have actual rooms that we can sort of run away to, even if they're not always ideal. I know there's a lot of listeners who probably don't have that, and things like going to a coffee shop or like going outside sometimes if the weather's nice and you're able to do whatever you're brand of creativity is, if it's something portable enough to bring outside with you. Sometimes I think that can not only make you more creative, but feel like you have more space just because like it is so open. It's not like you're trying to carve out some tiny corner in the dining room when everybody's screaming or whatever, you know, you've got that extra more calming environment. So that sort of thing I think can be really helpful.
Yeah, I like the point you make about natural light. I feel like I'm so much more at ease and relaxed when there's good light involved, as opposed to sitting under fluorescence in a corner or under like a yellow incandescent.
Yes, that is so true. And I've heard people say that about like houseplants too, where if they have to be inside because the weather's bad, having like an indoor plant can sometimes just make the space feel more alive.
Interesting. I would love to try that, but we can't have plants because our cat will kill them all. I have tried every kind, even cat.
We have the same problem here too, but you know, everybody on Pinterest says it works. So
we'll have to try that. Maybe once the cats die, I don't know.
So yeah, someday when our cats are dead, we'll work on that.
We'll have plants again, maybe. No, I really like that idea about kind of getting outside and giving yourself more physical space, even if you can't actually have space of your own. At least kind of commandeering a little bit extra makes things not so cramped or crowded. And I know for me too, it's always been easier to be creative when I have a space where everything is already set up for me. So I don't have to worry about like, oh, and now I have to get out my computer and plug it into the wall. And now I need to find that notepad that I was writing in or that kind of thing. So even if you're in a situation where you have to tear down your creative space every time, maybe you're borrowing the kitchen table once everybody's gone or all the kids are in bed, maybe just make it easy to set up and tear down as well. Like have one basket where everything you need goes in that as soon as you're done with it. And so you don't have to go track all those items down and find things when you're ready to make. You can just pull out that basket, put things on the table and get to work. I know that would be very helpful for people who don't have an actual dedicated space of their own.
Yeah, that's a great tip, especially for people who are doing those more physical types of creativity where you've got supplies and you actually need, you know, like I feel like I'm so spoiled as a writer because like give me a notebook and a pen and I'm good to go. But people who have actual like craft supplies and art supplies may feel like they're a lot more limited if they don't have those bigger spaces to work in. But I think that's a really good point that making it easy to be creative, having all your stuff in one space. And that's something I kind of instinctively do with my knitting too. Like I've got a basket with my yarn and I've got a little roll up thing with all my needles and patterns. And it does make it a lot easier to just pull that out at a moment's notice. Even if you've only got a couple minutes, it makes it seem more accessible.
Yeah, it would be much harder to do if you were like into watercolors. You can't really watercolor in the carpool lane, but you could knit or, you know, take a notebook and outline an essay or something. That would be kind of one of my tips, is just take your creativity with you if you can. Like you said, take it outside, but you can also take it to the carpool lane or to the salon when you get your hair done, or to your in-laws. I mean, there's no reason that it can't just kind of come along with you. And whenever you have 5 or 10 or 15 minutes to work on something. I was even thinking, I know they sell like all sorts of like non-spill cases for beadwork and stuff like that. So even if you are like into macrame, you could just buy a case that's going to keep everything really unspilled for you and stick it in your work bag and, you know, do something at lunch even.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great tip, especially with holiday traveling and things like bring stuff with you. That's a good time to get those creative projects worked on. And maybe if you don't particularly like the relatives you're going to be staying with, it could give you some downtime, a good way to pass the time. Hopefully that's not true. Hopefully you like your relatives, but you know.
Sometimes you can like your relatives, but they can become too much. Like if you're staying there for 3 days over the Thanksgiving weekend, like maybe you need a break and you can just go hide in your room and do some knitting.
That is very, very true. So is that something that you practice as a photographer as well? Like, do you bring your camera with you places?
Yeah. Before Arthur arrived, I kind of brought my camera everywhere. Like, I would even tote it back and forth to work with me, just because you never know when that moment is going to pop up that you want your camera. And there's been far too many times where I've only had my iPhone and been like, oh, bummer, this would have been so much better on my camera. Now that I'm carrying a baby and a diaper bag and all that stuff everywhere, I don't take my camera out hardly at all. And I need to get better about that.
Yeah. I can see how having all of the baby accessories make it like, I cannot bring one more thing. Do not even ask me to pick up my camera and bring it with me. But
Or even if you're holding the baby and the camera, like baby wants to smear saliva all over a camera lens, and then it's not any better than an iPhone photo.
Yes. So. Yeah, this is very true. But even if you can be like, I don't know, like thinking about that too, where maybe if you're going out to write, you grab your camera with you because Arthur's not going to be with you that day or that afternoon or something like that, you know, even bringing more than one type of creative work along somewhere so you can sort of switch it up. Sometimes that helps me too.
I like that idea.
Yeah. And that was, I think, one of my last tips about finding space of your own, if you feel like you don't have one, is maybe finding time for yourself rather than your own physical space would be more helpful for you. So like if you do need space to spread out, but you don't have a desk or an office, maybe you just need to commandeer the kitchen table after your kids have gone to bed or early in the morning before they wake up, like make them pick up their homework, make sure dinner's cleared up, like right after you guys eat, and just say, okay, this space is mine for these hours. Like, everybody get your stuff and move.
Yes, because all those lovely surfaces that we need to write and draw and color on often get covered by other people's stuff. It's kind of hard to keep surfaces clean in a house that has more than just you.
Yeah, this is true. And especially those big surfaces, you know, like the counters or the tables or like the places that are ideal for doing creative work, they just seem to attract piles of mail and folders and things that you're like, what is this? This coupon expired 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Why do I have it? Why is it here?
Yeah, I'm glad it's not just our counters that do that. They seem like they're magnetic, even though I know they're not.
Yes.
So, one other idea you had that I have never even thought about before is to make a creativity date with a friend.
Yeah, so I thought of this. I've never done this, but I think it would be kind of cool. And I was actually thinking about it because my cousin Nikki is also a very creative person, although in different ways. She is like, she does watercolors and she was a photographer and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, she'd be a cool person to just like hang out with and do creative stuff for the afternoon. And I was like, oh, I could actually see us doing that, like having a creativity date. And like, she doesn't have kids, so if I went to her house, like there would be space for me. And so maybe you've got a friend like that who has a bigger house or who has a space of their own that they're willing to share with you for an afternoon. Or, you know, maybe you've both got kids and you can hire a babysitter to stay at one of your houses and you guys take over the other house and do your creative projects. You know, sometimes pairing up with somebody like that even gives you accountability to work on one of your projects, and it could also give you the space you need as well.
Yeah, no, that is an excellent tip. And it makes me really regret that we live like 6 or 7 hours away from each other.
I know. I feel like we would be such great in-person friends if in-person did not require a cross the state drive.
Yes. And what a boring, boring drive it is too.
It really is.
So do you have anything that you really need to be part of your creative space in order to make something work for you?
I feel like it's more the vibe of a space. Like, I know there are a lot of writers who are like, these are my things that I need with me or else I can't write. So like little trinkets or something that they're like, this, I have to have this to write. But mine is more about the vibe of a space. So I need to feel cozy and at home, even if it's not my home, it still needs to feel like a cozy space. And I do like to have a computer, but it's not necessary. Like I've said, I do start a lot of my writing longhand. And then once I get into the nitty gritty editing phase, I move it to the computer. But I like comfortable seating too. So sometimes like doing creative work at a coffee shop isn't great for me because I want to be able to like get cozy in a chair. And coffee shop chairs are always like kind of beat up and you're like, who all has sat in this chair? And like, I just need to like a more comfortable spot. Maybe that's weird of me. I just need to feel really cozy.
No, that makes sense. Or you get that one coffee shop chair that like one leg is shorter than the others and it just rocks back and forth the entire time you're sitting in it. I can understand that.
Yeah, nobody wants that. So how about you? What are your ideal creative spaces?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you, I don't have any kind of like little talismans or anything that I need to have. Really, most of the time, a paper and pen works. I do probably 99% of my writing on the computer. I rarely write anything longhand, although that may change as Arthur grows and gets more and more interested in the computer. He already is showing the signs. How sad is that? My thing when I'm working on anything that requires like more than one screen, and by that, like a piece of paper with notes or an outline on the side, I really like to be able to spread out. I don't like to have things like stacked on top of each other that I have to like dig for. So having space for me, like more than just a little tiny coffee shop table, is ideal. But otherwise, I mean, like you said, writing is pretty portable. You don't need a whole lot to do it. If I'm doing like photography, really all you need is a camera and things to take pictures of. So that makes it even kind of easier in a lot of ways. Make sure your batteries are charged and you're good to go.
Yeah, that's a really interesting, like you need space to spread out. I like thinking of it like that. Mm-hmm. Which brings me to our next topic of conversation, because spreading out for certain people like me often means making a mess. So how do you keep your creative space organized? And are you a messy desk person or a clean desk person?
I am a 50-50 messy / clean person, if that is allowed to be a thing. I really operate with...
Totally allowed.
Okay. I operate in piles. Like, I have piles, but I know what those piles are. They are in piles and out piles, and like, this is the pile of things I need to do, and this is the pile of things that I don't need to do right now, but I'd like to do someday, if that makes any sense at all. So I'm kind of neat within a mess.
Yes, that makes total sense. Okay. I am very similar. My desk tends to get messy because I have a really big desk, which I think you mentioned you do too. And I need my desk to be the size that it is because I'm working on paper manuscripts a lot of the time and I have actual paper that needs to be spread out for my job. But when I'm not actively working on a manuscript, this giant space tends to become a place where I just go, oh, I don't need this. And I like shove it to the side instead of actually dealing with it. So it does tend to accumulate a lot of junk and a lot of like actual garbage and just things that don't need to be there. So, I think I probably fall into the 50-50. Like I like my piles, but I like them to be neatly organized. And I think I could be better about making that happen.
I think we all probably could. And that's somewhat maybe a, symptom of busy lives. You just kind of like, oh, I need to put this somewhere. I'll put it on my desk. So you set it down and then promptly forget about it for the next 2.5 months.
Yeah, very true. So what are your strategies for making sure that you keep your workspace relatively clean?
I guess my biggest tip, and this kind of comes from more of like a minimalist perspective, is don't go out and buy a big fancy desk organizer that you think you're going to use if it won't actually work for your own mental system. I know in the last 10 or 12 years, I've bought like several different like file holders or like little wire mesh organizer things where, you know, you can stack your paper in these and they'll take up less space. But I don't think vertically in terms of my piles, and they just have never worked, and they always just collect more dust than anything else. So making sure you kind of work with your own system when you think about buying things to help you stay organized, I think is really important.
Yes, that is very true. I know I always get sucked into that. They have like all the really cute office supplies at Target. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they're always switching them out just often enough that after I realize one doesn't work for me, I'm like, oh, but there's a new one. Maybe this one will be magical. So I do have some of that, like the wire mesh basket that you talked about. I actually have a huge stack of very messy paper in there all the time because it's my file box. Instead of filing things right away, I toss things in there for usually 3 or 4 months at a time. And then when it's like overflowing, I will go and actually file things away. So I've got those, and I've got a couple of baskets in like storage shelves nearby, mm-hmm. but I don't have anything actually sitting on my desk. And I feel like that's for the best, probably.
Probably. I would agree with that. So that's kind of like my biggest tip, but otherwise having kind of a physical quote unquote inbox where you can really put stuff until you do have time to process it. Like you and I both said, we're pile people. So having like one designated pile that like, this is something I need to do. I'm going to set it in this pile. And when I sit down at my desk, I'm going to do it. I think really works for me. So having just kind of that one collection space.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good point too, because I have that, especially now that Hadley's in preschool, they send most of their stuff through email, but every now and then you end up with a paper copy of something and I'm like, oh, I'll need to do something with this at some point, but right now is not that time. So where do I put this? And sometimes it just gets lost in the shuffle. So I like the idea of having a physical inbox. That's very smart. And you've also got some great tips for managing like digital clutter and digital things.
Yes. So I know a lot of times when you talk about being organized, we only talk about like physical stuff, or even when people talk about like minimalism or simplifying their life, they think that, oh, well, if it's on my computer, it doesn't matter because it's not taking up actual space. But I found more and more, and I definitely fall in that category too, like, oh, this is a free download. I'll go ahead and grab that and I'll get to it later, when later is like literally 4.5 years down the road. I kind of find that having digital clutter is just as bad for my mental state as having physical clutter. So my biggest tip is to find some kind of filing, like online cloud service that works for you. For me, it's Evernote. I also use Google Drive. But make sure it's something that uses like a keyword search, and then don't even worry about a mega like tagging filing system where you go in and tag each recipe with every ingredient that it contains, because you're never actually going to need that. If you need the black bean soup with chicken, you can just plug in black bean chicken and it'll pop up in Evernote for you. So that is my tip, is don't overthink filing systems online, but have something that helps you remember where you put things.
That is so smart. I have to say that I still resist organizing my digital stuff. I don't know if it's just because I don't feel that like sense of accomplishment afterwards. Like you clean your office mm-hmm. and you feel like, oh, this looks so much better. I don't have a very cluttered desktop, which is nice, but like my actual files could probably be a little bit better organized and more cleaned out. And I so admire how you use Evernote to like categorize so many things, especially recipes, which I know we've talked about before on here, because my brain like doesn't comprehend how Evernote works. And I realize that it's like a very simple system, but I just cannot get myself to use it. Every time I try, I'm like, no, for some reason, this just doesn't work. I think sometimes I'm just too much of a physical paper person.
I get that. I like Evernote just because you can get things from wherever you happen to be. So when I was still working full time, a lot of the times I would do like my meal planning at lunch because it was something like I could mm-hmm. do when I wasn't even at home. So then having access to all of my recipes and things without lugging 8 cookbooks with me was really important. So that's kind of what encouraged me to start doing Evernote in the first place. But I even keep like wish lists for Christmas gift ideas and recipes I want to try and different things like that in there. And being able to just like, I try to think of it like a Google search when I name a note and put like Christmas gift wish list, so that all I have to think of is one of those 4 words when I search in Evernote and it will pop up for me eventually. Or like a basic like vacation packing list, like everything you could possibly think you ever want to take on any vacation is in this list. And on vacation, all I have to do is pull that up and my packing list is essentially already created for me.
Oh, that is a smart one.
Yeah.
Very smart. I literally start a new packing list every time we're going somewhere different. So that's probably not the most efficient way for me to be doing things.
Yeah. Well, here's a new tip for you for when you start your packing list for, I think you're going away for Thanksgiving, which we're recording here about a week yes. before Thanksgiving. You can put it in Evernote or in Google Drive or something instead, and then you have it ready for you every time.
Yeah. Oh, I will say I feel very on top of my Thanksgiving holiday travel stuff because I have already packed the children's clothes.
Nice.
I was doing laundry. I was folding laundry yesterday and I was like, I'm not going to bother putting these away in their drawers. I'm going to just count out how many outfits they need for the trip and I'm going to put them right in their duffel bag. And then I don't even have to worry on like Tuesday or Wednesday about like, is this a, like when, what day do I have to do laundry mm-hmm. to make sure that everybody has enough clothes? Because it's just,
it's done.
The kids are the hardest people to pack and they're done. Yeah.
Excellent. Bravo.
Yeah, I feel very proud of myself, which just means I'm going to forget something important of mine. That's all that means, but that's okay.
I get that. Well, good luck. Good luck with the rest of it. I know you have instituted a new rule for your workspace.
I have. We're still working on actually enforcing it with my children, but my new rule is that no one can put things on mommy's desk and no one can take things off mommy's desk except mommy. Yeah. Because I keep ending up with like, so Hadley will not want her younger sister to get at her drawings. So she'll draw on like 75 different pieces of paper and she will put them all on my desk so that Reagan can't reach them. And then I'm like, wait, I had work up here somewhere. Where did it go? Or Reagan is like just tall enough that if I leave something towards the edge of the desk, she can like grab a notebook that I was using to, you know, do work in mm-hmm. and rip pages out of it. And or even, you know, Jacob doesn't do this very often, but he'll like leave something on my desk for me to look at or whatever. And I'm like, no, I just need to be the only person in charge of what goes on and what comes off of my desk. So my kids are pretty little to be fully understanding this rule. I'm working on it with Hadley and I know Reagan's not really going to get it yet. She's only like 15 months old, but I'm hoping that if we instill it now, it'll just become one of those like family rules that mm-hmm. all my children eventually know and obey.
Well, and eventually like the older kids can start policing the younger ones too. Like, no, you are not allowed to put that on mom's desk.
Yeah, so that's probably my most helpful tip that I've come up with lately. If you're somebody who has a desk and has a family or roommates who has trouble with that getting messy from other people besides yourself, just make it like an off-limit zone. The other thing I try to do, just a couple small things, have a small trash can in your workspace because it's embarrassing. There's like an actual pile of trash on my desk every single day because I do not have a trash can in my office and I need to buy one. There'll just be like Kleenexes or like a granola bar wrapper mm-hmm. or things that I just don't walk 3 feet to the kitchen to throw away. They just like, there's an actual pile of trash on my desk. Like that's not necessary. That does not have to be there.
Yeah. Go pick up a $5 Target trash can next time you're there and it'll make your life better.
Yes. Yeah. So that's Probably just very specific to me. That will probably not help anybody else, but that's something I've been doing, or I should be doing. And then I guess I try to maintain organized clutter, kind of like what you were saying with your inbox and your piles where you know what they are. I don't like having a totally clean desk because it almost looks too intimidating to me, but I do need to have relevant papers and my day planner and a blank notepad pretty much all the time. So if I have those things stacked up neatly in a pile in the corner, or if I've got them like in a paper tray or something, but just as long as they are like neat and not sprawled all over the place, I feel okay about it. So basically just like, maybe it just means like stacking up your papers into like a nicer pile, or like arranging your craft supplies into a like more visually appealing mess. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's all it takes, but that's something that works for me. So
yeah, that is a possibility.
There you have it.
Yeah. And I find too, that if like you have just all this paper that you never really need in the first place, like stop printing things. Or when you get your electrical bill in the mail and you pay it, just throw the bill away. You don't need to put it in a file because you can probably print it again if you ever actually do need a copy of it. Like there's nothing that actually disappears now that the internet is here.
This is true. I will say that I have to save so many of my bills because I take the home office tax deduction. Mm-hmm. So I have to save all my utility bills and my internet bills and like all the stuff. But you're right. It's all accessible online. So like if you were to get audited, like I save all the paper copies because I'm like, oh, but what if you're audited? Like it's still online. Mm-hmm. Or if it weren't online, I'm sure I could still call up the energy company and be like, hey, could you send me like a record mm-hmm. of what I've paid in the last like however many years? And I'm sure they would do it. So like, I think in general, people probably do hold on to more records than they need, like credit card statements, mm-hmm. even bank statements. Like you don't really need those paper copies.
Nope, because they're all on file. They have to be.
Yeah, very smart.
Which is nice. I know we have Verizon for cell phone service, and like each statement that they send you is like 8 or 9 pages long because they've got all like the FTC disclosures and every single phone call you made in that entire month. And I'm not going to file that and save 8 pages every single month. I can just go online and print it off if I ever should need it.
Yeah, that is a crazy amount of paper. Jacob and I have separate cell phone plans because he is on his work plan. Mm-hmm. He has like a work cell phone technically. Because it's not like cost effective for me to have like my own Verizon plan, I have like a track phone from Walmart.
Nice.
So I'm on like, it's their straight talk wireless plan. I don't even get a paper statement. I get a text and an email once a month that's like, hey, we took money out of your debit card. Thanks for paying us.
Oh, that is awesome.
And that's it. That's all I get. Yeah, it's kind of nice, actually. Yeah.
If I could convince like every single bill that I get to just send me an email, I would be so, so happy. But like our electric bill, like it's a tiny little community electric company that probably doesn't send things via email ever at all for any reason. So we still get a paper bill every month.
Well, maybe someday. Yeah. I think paperless is the way things are moving. So mm-hmm. we can only hope.
Paperless. Speaking of paperless, do you read only paper books or do you read things on your Kindle or Nook or whatever type of technology you have? iPad, that might be it.
Yeah, I really go back and forth. I have a Kindle. I'm on my third one because my first two are broken. So I'm on my third Kindle. It's not the Kindle's fault that they broke, by the way. It's my children's fault, for the record. So I do like my Kindle.
So you're averaging one per child so far.
Yes, so far. So I like my Kindle. I just, I sort of go in cycles depending on like, sometimes there will be really great deals on a bunch of eBooks and I'll buy a bunch of them and then I'll be on my e-reader more often. And sometimes mm-hmm. just like nothing will appeal to me, or I'll be like, oh, that's too much. I don't want to pay that for an e-book, or, you know, I'm like not going to the gym as often these couple weeks because I'm busy with work or something like that. I do most of my ebook reading at the gym like a weirdo, because I can walk on the treadmill and hold a Kindle at the same time a lot easier mm-hmm. than I can walk and hold a hardcover book or even a paperback. So, you know, just sort of depending on what's going on, I tend to read ebooks more often in the summer too if we're traveling more or if I'm outside more often. So in winter, I am more about paper books. That's sort of where I'm at right now. But I'd say it evens out throughout the year. How about you?
Yeah, I like that. Like I said, I'm just kind of doing almost all ebooks at the moment just because it's easier with a little one in tow. And I don't have to go to the library, which is even better. But I like that distinction you make about summer versus winter. I can definitely tell that as the weather's getting colder, I want to read paper books more. Like, it hasn't bothered me that I've only been reading on an e-reader for the past 6 months, but now it's starting to bother me, and I want that, like, physical, tactile reading experience.
Yeah, there is something about just being able to, like, turn the actual pages and, like, feel the cover and, you know, like, see, like, what size is this book actually? Like, is it small and compact? Is it a big book? Like, there's just something about that that I would not be ready to give up entirely.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So what have you been reading lately?
Oh, I've got such a good one this week. So it's a memoir called Recipes for a Beautiful Life, and it's by Rebecca Berry, and it is such a cute memoir. It is, and it's so relatable too. So she is a writer, and she wrote this memoir. It's sort of a series of like journal entries, except they're essays that she's gone in and cleaned up, and obviously, like, they're not straight from her diary journal entries. I'm sure a lot of work went into editing those, but like, each journal entry is like an essay, and it's spanning this this matter of years where she and her husband had these plans for what they were going to do with their lives, and they decided to move out of New York City and quit their big-time magazine jobs and go live in rural New York where they could have a house and raise their two kids, and they're part of sort of a farming community, so they've got all these friends who are farmers, and there's just more natural life. And the plan was for him to start a magazine on his own, and she was going to write a novel, and they were going to just carve out their creative living out here, outside the city, kind of going against the grain of what everybody else was doing. And it chronicles this journey of how all of their plans fell through, and then plan B fell through, and then plan C fell through, and just nothing was quite turning out the way they had planned. And writing a novel is so much more difficult when you've got little kids. And how do you balance paying the bills with doing the creative work? And it was just so relatable, I think, for pretty much anybody who has ambitions of making money at their creative trade, or anybody who's in a marriage where you're both creative, especially if you're creative at the same type of work. It was just really, really good. And the writing was hilarious. I was laughing out loud at some of her stories about her kids. And like, it was just a really, really wonderful book. I would recommend that to anybody.
Well, that is a glowing recommendation for a book that sounds right up my alley and probably the alley of everyone listening to this podcast.
Yeah, well, I hope so. She was a little bit woo-woo spiritually for me. So there was a lot of, like, I was meditating, and I was like, I talked to my acupuncturist the other day, and I was like, okay, so that's cool for you. But if that doesn't bother you, then you'll be okay with it.
Yeah. You don't ever plan to have, like, a life epiphany at your acupuncturist?
Yeah, I have. That's never happened to me before. No, but some people.
Yeah, I hear it's great, but I can't get on the acupuncture bandwagon. That just seems like terrifying to me anyway.
Yeah, it's the needles. But anyhow, so what have you been reading?
This week I finished the Leanne Moriarty book that I was reading, and it was called Truly Madly Guilty. And it was good. I mean, I think all of Leanne Moriarty's books for me kind of fall in that they're good category. They're like book club good, but not anything that's going to stick with me eternally, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, you really know what to expect from her as an author. It's kind of nice, because once you've read one of her books, you're like, okay, I'm in the mood for one of her books, and you know what you're getting. There are no surprises.
Yes, I think that is the perfect way to describe it. So when you just need, like, you need a dependably good read, you can turn to Lee and Moriarty and you'll be entertained for 350 pages or so. And it will be a good book. And you'll tell people, like, yes, it was a good book, but you'll never need to really read it again.
Yeah. What did you think of this one compared to her other books that you've read?
Well, the only other book of hers that I've read was Big Little Lies. And that one was, like, I would say on the side of really good. Like, I can see why that one was made into the miniseries. Mm-hmm. But this one I thought was interesting. She kind of tackles some, I mean, she always is tackling some kind of interesting topic in her books, I feel like, based on descriptions. But this one she kind of is tackling a little bit of mental illness. Like, one of the main characters, her mother is a hoarder. And you find this out fairly soon in the book. I'm not ruining it for anyone. So kind of the mental fallout of being the child of a parent who has that kind of a mental illness, she kind of dives into a little bit. But then also kind of the tension between whether or not you follow your career or stay home with your kids, or whether or not your spouse and you are truly suited for each other because you don't have the same interests or hobbies. Those kinds of topics. So it was good. It was well worth a read. And like, the mystery is, just like, you know, other books by her, she really is excellent at teasing out like a point towards which you are moving. And like, there's so much tension in the first half or three quarters of a book. And then all of a sudden, like, you find out the answer and you're like, oh, it all makes sense now. So she's really, really good at doing that, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, she's a great author, and she has really mastered that, like, twist plot that you didn't always see coming. I think there is only, I've read 5 of her books, I believe, and I think there's only one where I saw the plot twist coming. She is very good at, like, hiding that and misdirecting you, and it's like, she does make very compelling and very entertaining books, but I would say that Truly Madly Guilty is my least favorite book that she has written that I've read.
Okay.
I agree that Big Little Lies is one of her best, and I think I actually like What Alice Forgot even better than that one, at least equal to. But those two are for sure my favorites, and I don't know what it is about Truly Madly Guilty. I don't know if it was because I had read so many of her books before that I was like, meh. I think maybe if I had started with this one, I would have been a little bit more impressed by it. But it was still good. Like, even for being the least favorite that I've read of hers, I would still recommend it to people. I mean, it's still not bad. Like, she is a very good, very consistently well-written author.
And well-written is a good point. Like, a lot of times I feel like you can get into those thrillers and they're really formulaic. And there's still, I mean, I probably have like 30 or 40 underlines in this book because there's just so many really well done phrases that she uses that are very even specific to that subject matter or that topic that she's talking about.
2 good books in our mini book club this week. Wonderful.
I keep adding more and more and more to my list. It's really getting a bit out of hand.
I know. I do that too. I feel like I'm getting more good book recommendations from people now than I ever have before. And I'm like, but I'm so busy. Yeah. I want to read them all.
Yes. Can we just pause life and let me go read all the books, and then things will be better.
I know. I try to sort of give myself a Christmas break every year where I just spend 2 weeks like reading as much as I can while I'm still taking care of my children. But I try to take like 2 or 3 weeks off from freelance work. So that's hopefully it's something I'll still be able to do this year. We'll see how it pans out around the holidays. But fingers crossed, I'll get some more books in the next month or two here than I usually do.
That is an excellent suggestion. I'm going to have to try that. Until then, I guess we can say goodbye and chat next week.
Yes, we'll see you then. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag Chasing Creative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you'd like to help us bring this podcast to life each week, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/chasingcreative.
And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.